Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of Private Eyes Are Watching You. Super excited to have our guest on today, Harold McFarland from down in Sarasota, Florida. He owns and operates Quantum Cybersecurity and Investigations. And welcome to the show, Harold. Glad to have you on.
Yeah, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Excellent. So tell our audience a little bit about the type of investigations you work.
Well, we work pretty much exclusively only in investigations that are related to some type of electronics. So whether it's cell phones, the internet, computers, routers, all those sort of things, we work with those. So we're always recovering deleted data, whether it's purposeful or unintentional. We work on a lot of cases where we're finding out what businesses competition are doing and how it affects the, you know, their business. We track a lot of stuff down, a lot of bad actors out there who do things. We track through all the different things they put in the way so that we can't find them in order to find out who it actually is. And those are always the fun cases. There's a lot of interesting things out there. What I really like about that is you get people who have a degree in cybersecurity and all that kind of stuff, and they say, this is the way it's done, and so this is what happened. Then you go in and find out the bad guys are thinking outside of the box. That may be what you learned in school, but here's how it actually happened, and show them what happened. That's always fun.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up because I read some article somewhere, and maybe this is already dated, but it said something like, we're creating so much electronic data every day that we're creating like 8 times more data than existed in all of history each day. That's how much, you know, texts and emails and advertisements and posts and blogs and forums. It's unbelievable the amount of data that's generated every single day.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's crazy. And that just makes stuff like we do more interesting because there's a lot more stuff out there, but also because searching for that has become a lot more complex. You can't just throw a little Google search. You're getting 10 to 15% of the indexed internet. There's a whole lot more out there. So you have to have other spidering techniques to get it.
Yeah, and interesting that you mentioned about inadvertent and intentional deletion of data. I mean, there's you know, obviously some nefarious deletion of data where people are really trying to scrub what they've done in their history. And then there's really a lot of that, oh my goodness, I lost all of the photos from our vacation with grandma last year. I lost, you know, this important contract I had with my business. So there are some really amazingly helpful applications that you all can provide for the accidental deletion of data, whether it's personal or business related.
Absolutely. And what a lot of people don't realize is they think if we've deleted something and they've also emptied the recycle bin, then it's gone. But it's not. A lot of times we can recover most, if not all of it. And you'd be surprised how many times we've done that and found out from looking at their computer or at their cell phone that, wait a minute, this thing's doing a backup, you know, every couple of days to the cloud. And you don't even know that. Let's just go grab the backup. So, I didn't tell it to do a backup. They come configured like that. So it's
right,
okay.
Right. You know, you're right. The average person who buys a new computer for their home or gets a new cell phone or tablet just doesn't realize that the companies are, I mean, it's in their best interest to record what you're doing and then utilize that data in a way that allows them to repackage it, promote things, sell things. And, you know, some of that's a little bit scary sometimes. Some of it we're very grateful for because we can do all of these things. My operations manager was just telling me he got a new phone for the first time, I think in like 4 or 5 years. And just within like 2 minutes, they transferred everything from the cloud onto the new phone. He had all his contacts, all his photos, everything. The apps were all on there. And they're like, here you go, and walked out the door. It's just incredible the way that data is stored and how it can be retrieved and recovered.
Yeah, and how much stuff that you don't know is being tracking. And we can get into a whole different discussion of what's being tracked and how they're doing it, because that's a whole phenomenal, you know, other subset of things. But the stuff they track about you is amazing.
Right.
And sometimes, sometimes it's beneficial. I actually had a situation where I went into a store and accidentally left my phone in my car, and apparently it was unlocked. Somebody stole my phone. So I went home and got my laptop and got onto the internet and said, hey, it's got a Google account that it's associated with. So I went to the account, looked at tracking, turned it on. I could see the GPS of where it was at. So we got the sheriff, went over to the guy's house. Most people have no idea that everywhere you go with that phone is being tracked.
Right. And on the other end, he doesn't realize the phone he just took is being looked up and about to get a knock on the door from the sheriff.
Yeah. It was pretty funny because we knocked on the door and he said, I don't know what you're talking about. So I told the sheriff, just wait a second. I got out my laptop and connected up and turned on an alarm on the phone. So all of a sudden you hear, screech! There he is. That's my phone.
He stole the phone from the wrong guy, Harold.
Yeah, he did. It was pretty funny, though. Before he ended up at his house, we tracked him, you know, driving around town where he stopped to get a hamburger. And then when he stopped at a place for like 40 minutes, okay, that's his house. Let's go.
Interesting. Well, you told me a little bit about a story that we're going to talk about today that involved a few different levels of crime here. This was a business matter. The individual involved was, I'm guessing he was an employee of the company because he had access and trusted access to financials. But, you know, one of the things I always like to talk to our listeners and our viewers about is how did this case come to you? You know, we as investigators get cases a lot of different ways, and sometimes it's interesting the way our clients find us, but how did this particular case first come across your desk?
This one came across my desk from an attorney. We get a lot of our referrals are from attorneys. The person was being sued, and they were also going to press criminal charges against him. So his defense attorney for both the civil and the criminal case contacted us.
I'm glad you brought that up, and I don't want to gloss over it for a lot of our listeners. We talk to a lot of clients all the time, and we talk to their attorneys. And one thing that I always stress to our clients is, look, if this is something you're already working on or engaged with an attorney on, let's all make sure we're on the same page. Let's make sure that you're not hiring us and making an investment in an investigation that once we discover and secure and document that information, it's not something your attorney can even use, or it's not something that's part of your attorney's strategy. And it may even hurt his strategy if he didn't realize in advance what we were doing. So anytime we talk to attorneys and we talk to clients, we just make sure everyone's on the same page, so we're not wasting time, wasting money, or possibly, you know, digging up information that's not going to be helpful.
Oh, absolutely. It's critical to have a good working relationship with the attorney and to know what the goals are, you know, what they're trying to achieve or what they're trying to find out, because I can spend a lot of time finding, like you said, information that's no value. And I often have to tell clients things like, oh, this was stolen, you know, from your computer using the internet by somebody that we can track down and see, okay, I actually had a case, they're in Vietnam. You don't want to spend a whole lot of money going any further than that, because you're never going to be able to prosecute them. You're never going to be able to get any more information. You know, it's a waste of money.
Yep,
you can get there, though.
You're right on there about the goals. I mean, always understanding the objective behind the objective. You know, we can do the task, we can get the information, but if it's not really going to help your end goal, it's not worth that investment in time and in resources. So, all right. So this one comes across from an attorney, and he's representing a company, right?
Yeah, yes, he's repping the company and the individual.
And the individual. Okay, so tell us a little bit more about when it first came in. What were you told was happening?
Well, when it first came in, the attorney basically told me that his client had been accused of embezzling substantial amounts of money from the company. What made it kind of extra interesting is the owner was in the process of considering selling it to this employee. So the employee was a pretty high level access to everything, eventually going to take over the company in the next few years. So that's basically what he said. He's accused of taking money from the company, using it for personal, expenses, just engaged in a lot of other activities that are lowering the value of the company.
Right. Interesting. Few layers there. I mean, if you are considering purchasing the company you work for, it's kind of in your best interest to lower the value of the company.
And, bingo.
Getting money out of there and demonstrating a lower revenue or profit margin would benefit you if you're eventually thinking of buying that company. So was the suspected embezzler, was he an accountant? Was he a CFO, or he just had access to various accounts where he could affect those changes?
Basically, he didn't officially have a title as a chief executive officer, but that's pretty much the position where he was at. He was in charge of all marketing for the company and bringing on new clients and that sort of thing.
Okay, so he was serving multiple roles and had access to all of that stuff. So what were the first things they asked you to look at?
Well, the primary dollar amount and the one that they thought they had the cleanest thing to prosecute on was that he had went to Las Vegas to a trade show, and that was normal for this industry. They go to annual trade shows and conventions and try to get new customers. But there were a whole lot of expenses, cash advances, basically on the company credit card that were used. And when he got out there, so of course they had a listing of all those because he had a credit card receipts. So they had a listing from the credit cards, and they said, this wasn't used for legitimate business purposes. Attorney who
he's just taking out cash advances, not spending it at a particular place.
Well, the defense attorney, basically their position was, and his position was, that he got cash advances. They sold very expensive equipment, very high ticket dollar items, and he was giving money out to potential buyers and stuff like potential clients, to a little bit of pocket money for gambling and stuff like that. It's part of the schmoozing type thing. And that does happen at these conventions sometimes in Las Vegas. It's not out of line.
Right, right. Yeah, that reminds me of a time many years ago. I was working for a very good client of mine, and we went down to Puerto Rico and we stayed at a hotel where the cruise ships come in, and there's a casino there. And this guy is buying everyone into the roulette table with hundreds and hundreds of dollars of cash. And I asked one of the other guys that worked there, I'm like, this guy just independently wealthy? He just wants us to gamble with him, or what's the deal? And they're like, no, they give us a stipend or whatever they called it to take out vendors and clients. And I was like, man, that's wild. I've been taken to dinner before. I've been given small gifts, taken to events, but I've never literally just been given gambling money. And it was still uncomfortable. There was nothing comfortable about someone giving you money to essentially lose to a casino.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, that's a whole different world in the gambling world and stuff. And mm-hmm. A lot of the actual casinos will actually advance you money, knowing that if you're not a gambler, if they can get you to start,
right,
you'll
right.
get into your own money pretty quick.
little seed money, little taste.
Priming the pump.
So was he taking the cash advances from a bank or at the casino?
Well, that's kind of the interesting thing. The credit card receipts, all they had was the name of the company that was doing the cash advances. And a lot of the casinos have, you know, ATM machines there where you can get cash advances and a lot of things like that. So it was coming through like an ATM type cash advance, but it was off through the same company, which is not a big deal because a lot of the same companies represent the different casinos and stuff. And
right.
So it, you know, it looked legitimate on the surface.
Interesting. Yeah. We had a case where a client thought her husband was going to Las Vegas to possibly meet up with some women. And it turned out he was there just taking out hordes of cash from their joint account. And every single one, you could actually research and pinpoint the ATM and what casino he went from, MGM to the Paris to Caesars. And she was like, what are all these charges? You know, 500, 500, 500 plus the fee, of course, whatever they charge in,
right,
you
right.
know, ATMs, $9 or whatever. And so we kept seeing the same amount, 509, 509, 509. And we actually could research the ATM line item and say, yeah, at that time he was at the Paris, then he was at Caesars. These are cash advances from the ATM. So he wasn't doing what she thought he was, but she still wasn't happy. We'll say that.
Well, yeah, I can understand that. Yeah, I've seen a couple of cases where people went to two casinos just because that's one of the places where you can take a $5,000 advance and nobody thinks about it. It doesn't look suspicious. You mm-hmm. do it down at the Quarter Publix and people, oh, wait a minute, what's going on?
Right, right. So once you all, you know, got the information just on the amounts and the locations and the cards and all that electronic information that you had, you know, the client was still suspicious, of course, because this was more money than he typically would take out, or it just was out of character for him, or wasn't in line with company policy. What made those transactions stand out to them even more?
Well, the owner of the company just thought it was a significantly higher amount than what they had expected, you know, mm-hmm. for that. But the owner had never been to the Vegas convention either. And, you know, a lot of the vendors were doing that sort of thing. So again, to the person, the attorney who hired me, it all seemed, you know, logical, but they wanted proof. They wanted to know, you know, where he is at when this was, money was pulled. Was he at the casino where he was staying as part mm-hmm. of the convention? You know, where was this occurring? And you know how on a credit card, when you do an ATM, it has an ATM number and stuff on your receipt right. and stuff. But these did not have that. It just had the company that was doing the cash advance. So I thought that looked kind of peculiar.
Right, right. So can you say the total amount that raised this red flag, or is it too much detail to provide?
It was almost 50 grand.
Okay. That would raise some eyebrows. That's a lot to spend even in Vegas.
Yeah. And like I said, but looking at other companies in the same industry, you know, 30, 35 was not unusual at these conventions.
Gotcha. So how were you able to identify, or were you able to identify, you know, these line items that had the same company name? How were you able to pinpoint, you know, where he was when he took those?
I wasn't able to, but I researched the company that was doing the advances. Mm-hmm. My original thought was, well, we'll get some more information and stuff. We'll know where to send a subpoena, and maybe then we can get each location that he was at. But as I researched the company, it turned out they don't do general cash advances that you can use for gambling and stuff like that. They don't, it's not like an ATM where they just advance you the cash. They were basically clearing a credit card charge at very specific businesses. And basically, if you wanted to use a brothel, but you did not want it to show up on your credit card, this company took care of that. They provided that service for all the brothels in the area. And on the credit card, it just had cash advance and their company name.
And the generic
company. It was hiding that. Yes.
Oh, yep. That's, you know, that's the old gentleman's club trick. They have their ATMs list some fictitious LLC with an innocuous name, and that way it doesn't show up on the bank statement. So this company was not the company, this wasn't set up by the particular brothel. It was set up as a service that they provide to these type of businesses to run charges through there.
That's correct. That's correct. And that's the only thing that they did.
Interesting.
They provided for brothels.
And they just take a fee for that, I imagine. And
yeah,
you know, legal out there in Vegas. So how long did that take to uncover? I mean, what you know, if you can say what led to that? I mean, were there, you know, reports of it? Was it pretty easy to look at and say this company doesn't do anything else other than process transactions?
Well, actually, as it turns out, and then here we get into, again, knowing how to write good search algorithms for the internet to find unusual things. You know, I did some research on it. You know, they're very tight and closed about what they do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I found a couple indications that it wasn't quite what it appeared to be. And I actually found a 60 Minutes episode that talked about the company.
Man, that is great. That is phenomenal. That's awesome because, you know, we've found some similar situations where, you know, like an angry wife or something will post, you know, hey, if you ever see this on your husband's account, it's this business. And here, this was happening obviously to a level that it got to a national news broadcast. And
yeah,
you know, to the point where it aired an episode. So what were they investigating on the episode that they felt it was worth, you know, doing a segment on?
Oh, it was just part of the segment. The segment was on, you know, all the different places that provide services like that to hide what's actually happening.
Right.
And they were just one of the ones that was on there.
Including other industries that probably keep things quiet a little bit. Man, that's so interesting. So how did you break this to the client? Because sometimes it's you know, that part of our job as investigators is to very, you know, with great tact and, you know, great care and understanding, especially in situations that can be very sensitive, to provide information to our clients that they probably would rather not have hoped our case uncovered that type of information. But how did this one go?
Well, luckily I didn't have to do that directly with the person who was involved because the attorney hired me. I got to tell the attorney, I said, hey, dude, all these charges, we'll total them up. But here's the company, here's the information on it, here's where it's at, here's what they do, and that's the only thing they do. So, and then of course I told him, Sarasota County is a very conservative county. And I said, it's not gonna matter if your guy had the right to spend this money, you know, that kind of money on advertising or anything else. It's not gonna matter what company agreements are, because that was part of the issues and stuff. If a jury hears, oh, he spent it on brothels either for himself or for, you know, potential clients or something like that, they're not going to care. He's going to be guilty of everything.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I mean, depending on the situation, you know, the exact circumstances are no longer as important as the overall message. And in that, you know, court of whether it's in legal court or the court of public opinion, that's not going to go over well, regardless of, you know, what he was doing, whether it was for his client or himself or a combination or all of that isn't really going to matter. Did they end up subpoenaing the credit card company to get any additional detail, or they just?
Well, the law enforcement side had not subpoenaed it yet, and I don't know if they would ever figured out what we knew.
Right.
But basically, you know, the attorney says there's no way he's going to subpoena that, because once he's got it, he's got to share it with the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And once they've got that, they're going to make sure it comes up in court.
Right.
So
right.
He basically took the position, okay, given what we know, we need to plea bargain the best we can get, because if this goes to court, they're going to hang him.
Yeah. Yeah. So the company had they already filed criminal charges, or they were really just trying to handle this on the civil side and, you know, come up to some agreement with him as to what occurred?
Well, the owner had filed criminal charges also, but with restitution, he dropped the charges.
Gotcha. Yeah. So at that point, he probably just wanted this gentleman out of his business, out of his circle, and, you know, recover some of that that money. So that's that is a situation where when you've got a good attorney, you can sort of make things happen quick, get the information you need, get both parties to agree on some decisions, and avoid, you know, sometimes years of court litigation.
Right. And it's this particular one's a good instance of the fact that, you know, when you're hired as an expert, you got to be neutral and provide all the information to the attorney. Sometimes I'm able to provide them exactly what they want, and they got a really good case. And sometimes I got to tell them, dude, we found all this other stuff they don't know, that, you know, here it all is. It may not be what you want to hear, but here's what the truth is. And if they get to this is where we're going to be.
Yeah, and I imagine that happens all the time in your world, because you're starting to dig into electronic data, and you may be tasked or hired with finding some particular things or unraveling, you know, specific information. But then, you know, that's just the tip of the iceberg. Then you're finding all of this other stuff that you've either got to, you know, explain to them or provide to them and say, hey, if you open that up and start looking at it, you may not like what you're finding there.
Yeah, there have been a couple times I've told attorneys, you know, things kind of lead to in this direction, so you might want to subpoena this company, but this is what I expect you to find if you do, and it's not going to be good for your case.
Yeah, so. Yeah. It's, you know, it's a balancing act for investigators in the private space. You know, investigators in the criminal space, you know, if they're looking for one thing and they find some other crime taking place, of course they're going to either give that to a detective in that department or add those crimes or those additional charges to a case. But that's not exactly how we can operate. I mean, there's been so many times where we're doing work for a big Fortune 500 company, and they're saying, hey, we're concerned about this activity that's going on over here. And we start looking at that and we're like, okay, unfortunately this is internal and this is happening, you know, with your own staff. And then also, just so you know, there's this entire other thing over here that you weren't having us look at, but here it is. And we just never hear back from the client about that. They you know, and like, should I ask again, or should I just let that go? Because it seems like that's not even an area they want to, the road they want to start going down. They got enough problems with the initial thing they asked us to do. They're not even trying to figure out, you know, all of this other craziness going on.
Yeah, you run into some strange things sometimes. I had a case where they wanted me to investigate the office manager who they were sure had been embezzling a lot of money, and they had some evidence, and it was true. But it was like $700,000 or $800,000 over multiple years, and it just didn't look right. And as I looked at it, I found there were two different techniques being used. One was pretty simple, and that was definitely the office manager. One was a lot more complex. As it turns out, one of the owners, the one who hired me, was also embezzling, and he was trying to wrap all of his embezzling into hers and be able to walk away scot-free. So I just told the board, I said, hey, here's what it is. You guys are the problem.
Right. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. Yeah. When your client hires you to figure out their own crimes.
Yeah. He didn't expect me to find it. He thought, and he came with all the evidence all wrapped up in a bow and handed it in front of me, said, here's all the evidence. Here's everything she stole. I said, okay, I can't testify to that. I have to confirm all of it myself.
Right.
I started looking at it and I found out, no, yes, she did some, but he did about 2/3 of it.
He just wanted you to confirm all that and look the other way on what he was doing. We've been in that situation before. It's been a struggle sometimes when you're a paid investigator, when you're on a budget, when you are hired as a PI, there are going to be things you uncover. And there, we've had times where we've sent our clients reports and they've come back to us, or their attorneys have come back to us and said, look, you need to take out pages A, B, C, and D, because we don't want this information in here. We don't want to have to address this. And, you know, there's some, you know, and it's not real ethical or moral issue for an investigator to say, you know, they hired us to do this. I mean, obviously if there's a crime of a nature that's, you know, imminent danger to somebody or some horrific incident, we do have obligations to report things. But for the most part, when it's internal stuff, when it's business, when it's finances, when it's, you know, something that a client has hired us to do, it is frustrating when we're sort of hamstrung or, you know, sort of reined in on some of the information we're finding, even to the point of being asked to remove things from our investigative reports.
Yeah, and you make an interesting point there. There's a big difference between being asked to investigate something internally, like you're talking about, and we do a lot of those too. They think there's an internal investigation versus being hired as an expert witness on something. We get a lot of expert witness testimony too. When you're an expert witness, you got to put everything in, good, bad, ugly. It's got to be neutral. And if they don't like it, you still can't take it out. And because of that, a lot of attorneys hire us directly, because then we have attorney-client privilege. And as long as they haven't listed us as an expert on the court documents yet, they can just walk away and say, no, we're not going to use you to testify because we don't like what you found.
Right. You're too good at what you do, Harold. We don't want you up there.
I have run into that a few times. And, you know, I'm fine internally if the CEO hires us to look at something, you know, not putting stuff in the report, because you're hired to provide them the information that they're looking for. And if they say, this is not what we're looking for, fine. But when it comes to court, it's a whole different thing. You can't do your report to their wishes. It's got to be to the level of court as an independent person.
Yep. Interesting. It's funny. I always tell people I've been a PI now 19 years. I've been called to testify in hundreds of cases, maybe thousands of cases, but I've actually only ever testified twice. And both times the only thing I testified to was my name, the fact that I'm an investigator, and that I was hired by the one party or the other. Those both times, that's all I was asked. And then I stepped down. I was like, okay. So it's interesting, our profession and the differences between what, you know, you see on TV and the things we actually go through. But Harold, you were telling me about a very specific situation you all are running into with emails and some of the things that are going on behind the scenes. I want you to share with our listeners and our viewers. And so for our listeners, we'll just have to explain to them what we're talking about. And for our viewers, you're going to share your screen and show us a couple little interesting things that are happening in the email space right now.
Okay, well, this is something that we've run into. Of course, if you get an email, people take the emails out of the company system. They use them in court for various things and stuff. So here's something we've been running into for years. But every time I mention it in court, they get an expert with a computer sciences degree, computer security degree, says that's not possible, and I end up having to demonstrate it. So it's a kind of interesting situation. But the bottom line is, emails, let me find the right screen here all of a sudden.
And this, while you're finding it, this has to do with somebody sending an email or forwarding an email or documenting an email and then changing it in some manner that substantially affects the maybe even date, time, who it came from. I mean, how much can they change and manipulate?
Absolutely everything. And the biggest thing that everybody would tell you can't be done is that they can't change email content. Okay, so I've sent myself an email that basically says, this is the original email content. Okay, so I'm going to take that, I'm going to drop it into a directory too, so it's out of the email system. This is what happens when you do a backup. I want to show you that it also changes the backup and everything else. So no matter where you look at this email, it's now different. Okay, so now I'm going to go over to, I've set this one up ahead of time and done it a specific way. So that I'm allowed to do this, or able to do this. Okay, so it says this is the original email content in the preview.
Yep.
I'm going to change directories. Now I'm going to open up that email again. This is the new email that is changed. I changed the content after it got into their Outlook. And in your backup, in your file system that's out of the email client, I can open it there. This is the new email that is changed. So it's changed in the backup system everywhere. You can't get that first one back.
Wow. I don't know. I'm almost speechless. That's unbelievable to see, the manipulation that can occur and then how quickly that can happen. And so, as an investigator for many, many years, and as someone who is constantly documenting, essentially everything we're doing, what can a person do to protect from something like that? I mean, we do some rudimentary things or some things that are just, that anyone can do, like just cut and paste an email, snip, screen capture, something that will save that original document if it's, or that original email, if it's something that is potentially going to be important for them later on.
Yeah, you can either print it, which I don't like always printing because anybody can type something up and print it, or save it as a snip, or save it as an image file, a PNG, a JPEG, or something like that, and you will have the original. If you leave it in the email format, I'll get it changed.
Wow, amazing. So then even if it were changed, at least the person would have the image file that they saved from the original email and could have some recourse in terms of, combating that
change and
email information.
I had a case, for instance, where a guy was trying to lure teenage girls out to his area, runaways and stuff, and basically he would send them emails saying, hey, here's some money, buy a plane ticket, get out here, da-da-da. But he would then send, after he'd sent the money and stuff like that, he would change the email. So if the police ever got onto it, it would not be an issue. He always changed the email to say, hey, I'm sorry you're having such a rough time. Here's some money to spend however you want. I'm a deacon at my church. This is part of our ministry, da 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 da. And it's a beautiful email that completely throws them off track. And who cares if they trace the money back to him? He says in the email, this is for you, use however you want. And so it completely changes the case.
And that original email is gone forever.
Right. Now, it does, when you do this techniques, and there's two or three ways to do it. they do leave artifacts. So I can look and say, hey, this may or may not be the original email. It may have changed. It's set up in such a way that it can be done. But no, I still can't get the original. But I can testify in court and say, hey, you can't rely on this because it was done in a way that it could be changed.
That it could have been changed. Interesting. Well, that's one comforting piece of information that you can get, at least to be able to say that, hey, look, this was created in a way that could have been changed. It may not be the original message, and it can't be can't really be considered as absolute proof that, you know, the other message wasn't sent. So
right.
That's unbelievable, man. Well, Harold, we live in a time where we have to worry about everything from fake news to these deep fake videos and all this other stuff that's going on. And man, the work that you and your team do is so important to, you know, business owners. It's important to individuals. It's important to attorneys. It's important to our system of justice for so many reasons. Tell us where people can find you, your website, phone number, anything, because you all do work for people across the country, across the world. You know, we're a global society now, so anybody who needs your services can find you. Tell us how they can find you and your company.
Okay, our email is quantumcsi.com. It stands for Quantum Computer Cybersecurity and Investigations. Other PIs out there might recognize me from McFarland and Associates. We just did a rebranding recently. So yeah, we're the same company. Phone number is 941-256-8845. And my personal email is harold@quantumcsi.com.
Awesome. Well, Harold, so glad to have you on today. So informative, and just, you know, scary stuff out there with all this data floating around and how it can be manipulated. And so we need investigators like you who can get to the root source of this stuff and unravel some of these data mysteries, because most people are so novice at it. We're just, you know, we use these devices and we use this technology because it's so convenient, but we don't realize how much of our privacy we're giving up. And so when people come to you and your team, they can feel comfort knowing that if it's out there, you're going to find it and you're going to be able to explain it and be able to present it in a way that's usable and understandable for the average person. So Quantum Cybersecurity and Investigations, quantumcsi.com, for all of our listeners and viewers. Harold, thank you so much for being on today, man. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. I enjoyed being here.
Excellent, excellent. And to all our listeners and viewers, join us every single week, because you never know when private eyes are watching you. Thanks again.